Welcome back to Sewage and Water Board Managers Missing in Action During Crisis That Led to the Boil Water Advisory. Joining us on the line is David Hammer, WWL-TV investigative reporter and part of the team that has led the Down the Drain investigative series. David, welcome to the show.
Always good to be with you, Newell.
David, you initially reported about that there was one person there and then ultimately followed this up with two employees that were missing. So what's the story here?
Well, there are two different things. One is a question of appropriate staffing levels for dealing with a crisis incident like happened on November 17th in the early morning hours when they lost power to the pumps that provide the drinking water for the city. And an issue where you can debate whether you need more than one guy who needs to deal with power and pumping issues at a pumping station. And the question of what we learned yesterday at this city council meeting, where we found out that two supervisors, not high-level, kind of mid-level supervisors who had to sign off on the use of a backup pump, were nowhere to be found when it was necessary to get their approval to go ahead and do it. Then you start talking about the difference between one-off bad actors or people who are just not doing their jobs properly and larger systemic questions of that, you know, the long view of how we can fix the Sewage and Water Board.
So have they been able to determine, because they said they were present, but they were missing in action, not to be found. Mm-hmm. Were they aware mm-hmm. of the situation and just didn't want to get involved and feared consequences of maybe making the wrong decision? Or have they figured that out yet?
Well, we don't know what was exactly behind this. Ghassan Korban, the executive director of the Sewage and Water Board, did not want to give a lot of details because the internal investigation that will be used to take action against the employees has not been finished. Now, one of these guys resigned and is no longer in the picture. The other one is suspended, and they have to build a case through the civil service system to fire that person. So they are being kind of cagey about the details. But it is clear that these people were there. They were on the premises. Some of the city council members had the exact same question that you had. They're like, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about they were in the bathroom and indisposed when they needed them, or they freaked out when they saw how bad the situation was and ran away? What are we talking about? And Korban wouldn't say except to say they were there. They did not freak out. They just did not do their jobs.
We've had a lot of infrastructure failures and now this human capital failure, so mm-hmm. to speak, if they were there but just, you know, were not where they were supposed to be at that given moment in time. And everybody, I think, I would hope by now that everyone in the organization understands how important it is that the system is up and running all the time. Otherwise, we face these boil water advisories. We're a tourist town. I mean, when you think about the hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions of dollars lost and opportunity lost for any number of businesses because of this happenstance.
Yeah, and you think about the money that's been spent supposedly creating all this redundancy that would try to avoid these problems from happening that we saw writ large back in August of 2017 when so much of the city flooded and there were power and pump failures that caused that. Now, that was on the drainage side. There's the system of drainage pumps, and here we have the system of water pumps to provide drinking water. But it's really such a decrepit system. I mean, I did a story just a couple weeks ago about a loss of water to the Lakeview area, and you're talking about water lines that were over 100 years old and were leaking. So you have this massive infrastructure problem, and then you add to it the human capital issue that you were just describing, and it's just a recipe for disaster. I think that you need to focus more on the systemic issues, and you got to think about ways that you can shore things up with all of this redundancy that they're trying to build up, because what we saw in the situation on November 17th was that they had many different levels of redundancy. They had different types of power, different sources of power, and it still all failed. and then you spend $80 million to put in a water hammer water tower that's supposed to help you keep the pressure up, and it did, but then all you need is to have this one failure with these two supervisors who were not there to sign off on the use of a backup pump, and it costs you a few extra minutes, and that's all that's necessary to force you to do another boil water advisory. So in some ways it was Murphy's Law, but I think the upshot here is that these guys have a lot that they can do with the system to make it at least harder for these types of things to happen.
David, has there been any conversation? I mean, when we talk about drainage, sewage, water, we understand that power to the pumps that pump, you know, that support all three of those activities is spotty at best. Has there been any discussion amongst the council and the administration of creating a priority of funding in getting the power in order? Forget about the age of the pumps. They can't operate right. without power. Has there been any discussion? You know, I mean, there's a lot of programs that are being funded out of the city budget that we're going to reap the benefit in 10 to 15 years. But these are absolute necessities. And,
yes. There has been discussion. In fact, one of the things that was discussed at the meeting yesterday was how we can move forward on the Entergy substation issue. This is something that I covered back in 2017. The fact that they're using distribution lines, those overhead power lines, to actually be the prime source of power for the sewage and water board system, both drainage and water, is really pretty scary. And all of this started on November 17th when a car hit a power pole and compromised the power source there, which was only one of the sources of power. But Entergy didn't tell the Sewage and Water Board because they didn't have a protocol in place at the time, which they say they've now changed, to notify the Sewage and Water Board as a customer when they're going to lose their power. So all of that could have been fixed or at least made stronger if there was a dedicated substation with transmission lines, which is a higher quality of power and more, you know, protected from things like cars hitting a power pole. And that would have taken it off of that kind of weakened grid and put it on a stronger power source. Entergy and the Sewage and Water Board have been fighting for years about who's going to pay for it, how's it going to be done, how much is it going to cost, and they've got to cut through that. And one of the things that we see now is a change in leadership in both the Sewage and Water Board and Entergy, and the hope from both utilities is that they'll finally get to work together here. They'll, you know, turn over a new page, get the thing done, and they're targeting 2019 next year for potentially building that substation. But a lot has to happen, and that has stalled for a lot of years. But that would be one potential solution.
And, David, this may be can you stay with us through the break?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to be right back. We have David Hammer, WWL-TV investigative reporter, as we continue this conversation as to two sewage and water board managers missing in action, as reported by WWL. We'll be right back after the break. Stay with us. We're back, and we're talking to David Hammer, WWL-TV investigative reporter, and he's been reporting on the Down the Drain series for, actually, David, that's been quite a while now.
Yeah, well, since really we picked it up with the August 5th, 2017 floods, and we had that one-hour special back in November 2017, Down the Drain, but it's been a whole series of reports, and it continues because this issue, not just with drainage, but also with water service and the billing problems. I mean, it's just at every level of that utility organization.
David, I wanted to ask you as to whether or not there's been any conversation along these lines. When we think about the frailty of the system, as you so appropriately pointed out, one power pole struck, one power pole down, and that leads us to a boil water advisory, and there's a breakdown in communication between all of the critical players here, right?
Yes.
has there been any discussion of like a multidisciplinary operations center that's a 24/7 operation that's monitoring all of these systems and making sure and ensuring that the necessary folks can be in contact with one another in a real time on a real time basis?
Well, that would be a terrific idea. It would remind me a little bit of what they do with offshore oil and gas operations with the real-time monitoring centers. I don't know about the specifics on that. I know that the legislative committee, the task force that was created by Representative Hilferty, is looking at ways that they can streamline the whole system and get the different shareholders, so to speak, to work better together. And one of those issues, of course, is that the city controls part of the drainage system, while the Sewerage and Water Board, which is actually a state-created entity, controls another part of it, and they need to get those people on the same page as it relates to drainage. Certainly, the issue with Entergy is that's a private entity that happens to have a monopoly that is regulated by the city, but they don't have the same level of control over them on a governmental level, and I think that's been part of the problem there. But absolutely, if you could get all of these folks to work together and pull in the same direction, and some kind of a central, monitoring center would make sense. Have you heard anything specific about that?
No, I was just kind of curious. I mean, you were describing the frailty of the system, when you think of just what, how many thousands of power poles do we have in this city? And one goes down and it leads to this situation. And we get a number of texts and people that call in, and they all say that, the hospitality industry and the entertainment industry here and all of the ones that are affected by servicing the tourists and everything else, they all say, they've been pretty patient. You really haven't heard them out, beating the drums on this. And at some point in time, it's going to happen because they just can't continue to face these challenges.
Well, one of the things I said to Melanie Stewart when I was interviewing her last night, she's the vice president from Entergy. I said, you didn't have a protocol in place to notify customers, but Sewerage and Water Board is not just another customer. They are a mission-critical utility just like you are. And she said, yes, absolutely, we now have a protocol in place that we're going to start using. But why it comes to this point before they realize this is that's one of those questions. Like, why have they not been able to get on the same page all these years? Some of it may have been personality-driven. Charles Rice at Entergy and Cedric Grant, who used to run the Sewerage and Water Board, Charles Rice recently left as the CEO of Entergy. They clearly had some issues where they were, bickering back and forth in various communications that I reported on. So maybe part of the issue is personalities, and maybe they can start fresh and get on the same page, but it's really important.
Yeah, I mean, that seems to be just a complete total breakdown in credible leadership and governance. I mean, as you pointed out, that's a fairly simplistic thing. And if you don't have that view and that perspective until now, and as you pointed out to her, I mean, I don't understand how we've gone all of these years and we're not talking to one another. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand's doing.
Yeah. And it is something where they've got to see that the city is the Sewerage and Water Board in this case is one of their biggest, if not their biggest customer, but they've got to be on a different level from your residential or even commercial customers because it is so critical for the whole city.
Well, it's becoming blatantly obvious to me that this begs of an individual being in charge of all of this and being able to break these barriers down that's not intrinsically linked to any one of these disciplines and just be able to force people to communicate and force things to happen. Because if not, it seems as though there's this inertia and nobody's moving.
Except that, just to play devil's advocate on that, you had Cedric Grant, who for the first time was in this kind of, Uber position as a deputy mayor at the same time that he was the executive director of the Sewerage and Water Board. with ostensibly with the idea of pulling all of these disparate things together, and it didn't seem to do any good. So one of the criticisms of him was that his attention was elsewhere, and he wasn't focused on just one thing in terms of getting the Sewerage and Water Board right. So there's arguments to be made on both sides on that.
Yeah, well, I guess at the end of the day, it comes down to the individual that you pick and whether or not they have the skill set and the moxie and the energy to pull it off.
Yeah, and leadership, I think you're hitting on something there, because you saw this string of 7 interim leaders of the Sewerage and Water Board, and for continuity's sake, and we saw it with a perfect example with that substation thing that I was talking about, you know, Melanie Stewart told me they had not actually really been in any kind of negotiations since Paul Rainwater was one of the interim managers of the Sewerage and Water Board after the crisis in August 2017. So now we have a permanent guy with Ghassan Korban, and a lot of people are saying, hey, let's let this guy come in here. He's coming from Milwaukee. He's taking a fresh look at all this stuff. Let's give him a chance to turn this thing around.
Do we have any idea of what the cost is for this turbine repair that they're talking about?
Oh, the one for upgrading the Turbine 6? They
yes.
said that only on the order of $1 million. And Jay Banks from the city council said, oh, if we can do something for $1 million, he said, I've never had $1 million, but that seems like a small price to pay.
Yeah, let's vote on that tomorrow, right?
Exactly.
David, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We look forward to your next reporting, and hopefully it's not on the Sewerage and Water Board, maybe.
You take a break from that?
Yeah.
Thanks, Noel.
Thanks so much for your time. We always appreciate it. David Hammer, WWL-TV investigative reporter. We're going to continue this conversation. Stay with us. We'll go to the talk lines. If you're on hold, stay on hold. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. That's right. Give us a call, 260-1870, talking about the two Sewerage and Water Board managers missing in action. Let's go to Johnny from New Orleans on line one. What say you, Johnny? Johnny, welcome to the show. Johnny, you there?
Newell, I'll make one comment about the teacher's pay raise.
Yeah, sure.
If we're going to give a raise, are the standards of Louisiana educational system going to be any better after this Southern average is accepted, or average salary is going to be put in?
Well,
bottom of the barrel, as we usually are.
From a global perspective, I think you try and do the base pay of teachers and raise that to try and lure young teachers to come and work here in the state of Louisiana. There's a teacher shortage. There's a huge teacher shortage here. And throughout the Gulf South, we're in competition with other states in trying to attract teachers to enter our public school system. Not unlike a lot of other government employees and government agencies, you're not able to give merit raises. And that's just one of the frailties of government. I mean, you give these pay raises, and they typically are across-the-board raises, and they're not individual merit-driven raises that are given in order to reward the best of the best in the teachers. In higher ed, they have a little bit more flexibility than they do in K through 12, but that's just the frailty of government, so to speak. And it's also a frailty of a civil service system and any number of other issues that any government leader is facing, Johnny.
Well, thank you very much.
All righty, Johnny. Thank you for the call. We want to hear from you, 260-1870. Let me remind everyone that 'tis the season for giving and hearts for holidays. Deuce McAllister and Zach Streif will be at Mercedes-Benz in New Orleans on Veterans in Metairie Friday, 4 to 7. The mission, to highlight Angel's Place. They provide respite care and support services for children with life-threatening illnesses in their family. It is really a great cause, folks. Come by, talk Saint Football, and make a donation. Hearts for the Holidays with Zach and Deuce Friday from 4 to 7. At Mercedes-Benz, New Orleans, 3727 Vets, with a special musical performance by the LPO's harpist Rachel Van Voorhees. And happy holidays from WWL. And also, Thursday, Sports Talk with Christian Garrick, live from Hooters on Vets and Metairie. It's the player show with this week's special guest, wide receiver Keith Kirkwood. Plus your calls, a lot of standout players this season for the Saints so far. Which player has impressed you the most? Then the View from Vegas at 5:10, Tulane Tuesday with Willie Fritz, and fantasy football advice from RotoWire's Kevin Payne at 7:35. So huddle up, 4 to 8 at the home of the Saints and LSU and WWL Radio. We want to hear from you, 260-1870 or text us at 870-870. We've been talking about the Sewage and Water Board. We'll be right back after the break. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and we'll go to line one. Ronnie in Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the show, Ronnie.
Hey, how you guys doing this morning?
I'm doing great. I'd be doing a lot better had we won last Thursday.
I know. Me too. I was calling to tell you guys, man, that you seen the movie Waterboy?
When,
the coach looked over there at the other coach. They said that's the way. He looked at Sean Payton. That's the way Sean Payton looked with the puppy dog face on his head. every radio station, every news station, every sports station seeing the Cowboys play a Pee Wee League football team Thursday. It was so bad, they talk about it in the church house. They talked about it everywhere you go. And they said, I'd be ashamed of myself for being in Dallas, being the same thing.
Well, you know better than that.
I know, sir. They talked about us so bad.
Victor goes the spoils. They can enjoy this one moment. They've not had a good or a great season, and there's still a lot of season left for them.
Oh, they won the Super Bowl when they beat New Orleans on Thursday.
That very well may be their Super Bowl, but it's not the reality Super Bowl, right?
No. They talked about Drew Brees. They talked about Kamara.
Who's up next for Dallas? Who does Dallas play next, do you know?
I think they play the Eagles, I think.
The Eagles? And the Eagles, beat the Redskins,
Yeah.
And so it's a big game for that. That's going to be a big game for both of them in the NFC East then. All right.
Beating the Saints is a bit more than that. So I just wish Sean Payton could know what all been said about him and his team.
Well, I think he probably has a pretty good idea. And I think, I think their approach is going to be a smart one and a simple one. It was just one game.
And, yeah, exactly.
You know, the designation of the playoff games and the Super Bowl are yet to come. That game may have been their Super Bowl, but it's just a game. They got to go back out on the field this next weekend and perform, plain and simple. No doubt
one
about it.
One more thing.
Yes, sir.
One more thing before I let you go. They always talk about their 5 rings.
Oh, their 5 rings, yeah. Well, they've been a successful franchise over the years. Not as much recently, but over the years, they've had a successful franchise. And there's no doubt they wanted our coach at one time, right?
Yep. And they still want it.
Yep. So, all righty, Ronnie, thanks so much. Appreciate it. We'll go to Bobby in New Orleans on line two. What say you, Bobby?
Hey, Mr. Norman. Good afternoon. How are you today?
Doing great. Doing great.
Thanks. That's good. Years ago, regarding the city had an inspector general. One actually came from my hometown, Boston. His name is Robert Sarasoli.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had some health issues. And he was fighting a lot of feedback, negative feedback, on his office and what he was trying to accomplish. And something like this in a city, a tourist city, where we have Mardi Gras and we put in bids for a Super Bowl, as well as NCAA basketball, regionals, finals, Sugar Bowl coming up. The city can't afford to have people with performing a necessity of providing water to the city. And
right.
I don't know what it would take for the one employee that's suspended to actually get fired And if he does get fired, he shouldn't get, in my opinion, he shouldn't get his pension.
I don't know if he's entitled to it. Look, everybody makes mistakes, and it could be a drastic outcome for that. That is yet to be revealed. That's why I asked David Hammer the question, and he said they have to go through their civil service process. And ultimately, I'm confident that Ghassan Korban, the executive director, will reveal what he can under the law, because it is a personnel action, and there are some privacy issue and considerations there. And I understand the balance of the interest in all of that. There is an inspector general still today, and that office is alive and well, and hopefully they will be looking into some of the frailties of what's going on here. I think this could be potential misfeasance or malfeasance that needs to be looked at. Obviously, one of the employees was concerned because he immediately resigned, and the other one is on suspension.
Yeah, we're talking about providing water.
I get it. It's an absolute necessity. That's why I was talking about this prioritization. You know, if one pole down leads to this, it would seem to me that we should have a multidisciplinary operations center where we have representatives together or in communication all the time. Because if you think about the money loss and the opportunity loss every time this system goes down, I mean, it's huge. And it would be a small price to pay to finance this. And maybe instead of the $5 million that Entergy is going to, or NOPSI has to pay, or Entergy has to pay as a fine, they can use that as some of the seed money to provide this operations center and keep it alive and going. And that way, we're not going to have this situation where we can bring the powers to be in one room and make these decisions real time and make sure that these critical services are provided. You know, you think about hospitals. You just go down the laundry list.
Hotels.
And I mean, every, you know, hospitals. I mean, hospitals are critical. I mean, you know, and then you got a boil water situation. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. I had a guy from Kansas on the other day, worked in a water system for 22 years, never had a boil water advisory. Not one time.
I heard that.
Not one time.
I heard that on your show.
Absolutely.
I heard that.
Bobby, thanks so much. We got to get to a break. We'll be right back. Stay with us. This is Newell on WWL. We're back, and I guess it's time for me to eat crow. So I'm going to go to line one and talk to Susie. All right, Susie, I'm ready.
Hey, this is Susie. I told you that Dallas was going to run you people out of Dallas.
I remember the conversation vividly,
I can assure
Susie.
You that we do not want you in Atlanta. So, good luck.
I dished it so I can take it, Susie. Y'all can wallow in your victory. To the victor goes the spoils, right?
We're doing that. I think it was marvelous.
Yes. Y'all did play a good game. I actually, what was the guy that – was it DeMarcus Allen? I forgot his name now, who talked about what they were going to do. They did it. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, I was very surprised at the first three possessions that we had. I don't think we made a first down. The first – set of downs, I think we had three incompletions. But having said that, we live for another day, and the Houdat Nation will be back on Sunday against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They will redeem that loss, and Dallas will not make it to the playoffs, and we will. That's my next prediction, because now I'm rooting against Dallas. I may be pulling for the Eagles, and I never did like the Eagles, so we'll see. And that's a rough crowd over there in Philadelphia, and so we'll see how that ultimately works out. On the Blue Runner opinion poll, have you lost all confidence in the Sewage and Water Board? 87% of the folks say yes. And by the way, Susie is an Atlanta fan, and it was DeMarcus Lawrence. Thank you. I can always count on my audience for setting me straight. I know that she was not pulling for us against Dallas. I do recall that she is an Atlanta fan, and she doesn't like the fact that we call them the Dirty Birds. And everything that goes along with that. But I'm a good sport. I can eat crow. I was talking trash. She was talking trash, and we'll see what ultimately happens. I think we beat Atlanta twice, right? Is that how it goes? We played them twice. We beat them twice this year. So we'll see. And I don't think they're not in the playoff picture at all, right? I need to be reminded. No, that's correct. They're not. So, you know, just a friendly reminder, Susie. We're in the playoff picture, and you're not. So, we'll see. We can have a little fun with that for the rest of the week as well. I am looking forward to the game this Sunday. I do believe, as the governor pointed out, and I believe his prediction is right, that if you're a Tampa Bay fan, you will rue this game, because we will go about taking care of business. And maybe that was the situation. We were a little bit too confident, and we should have fallen in the category of just taking care of business as opposed to that. I want to thank everybody for their participation today. Really enjoyed today's show. We talked about the latest issues surrounding the immigration issue. We still having issues at the border. We had a great opportunity to talk to Governor John Bel Edwards about his views on his last year and of his term and heading into the legislative session. And obviously also David Hammer, the investigative reporter. We'll see you again tomorrow.